Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. I'm your host, Roy Richards. And as we progress through our late 40s and into our 50s, most of us will experience an exciting new aspect of life, grandparenting. Here's your chance to be young again and help guide a whole new generation as they experience the wonders of life and progress through childhood. Here's your chance to relive fond memories of when you were children or when your children, their parents, were babies and toddlers and you were young parents. On the other hand, grandparenting can be complicated and at times stressful because you are not the primary caregiver and decision maker, and you must respect and defer to parent wishes. And as a further complication, one of the two persons with the primary responsibility for parenting each grandchild is an in-law, not a person selected by you personally, and whose only real connection to you is a mutual love for your child and your grandchild. And there always lurks the potential for in-law friction and mutual hurt feelings, so we grandparents must proceed with caution. Now, I must admit, grandparenting is a subject on which I have no first-hand knowledge because our only surviving offspring, son Jeff, is still single and has no immediate prospects. Therefore, we call on a well-known TV grandma who is in real life the Reverend Greta Shishita, an ordained minister, sought-after speaker, university educator, workshop leader, spiritual counselor, and a popular author and blogger. And you may have seen Reverend Greta in guest starring roles on Law and Order, Grey's Anatomy, Bold and Beautiful, or in recent Hallmark commercials. And through her seven-pointed star ministries, Reverend Greta is widely recognized for her inspirational insights on building strong, meaningful, multi-generation family relationships. Reverend Greta, it's an honor to have you as a guest on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Roy. I'm delighted to be here. And well, your description of the grandparent situation sounds a little daunting there with all of the, the possibilities for misinformation and miscommunication and misunderstanding.
Yeah.
But it is a delight, and I am a grandmother. I have one granddaughter, and she happens to live with me with her mother, and she really is the delight of my life. I don't know. You know, people say if they'd known how wonderful grandchildren would be, they would have had them first before they had their children.
It's a little easier to get away from the grandchildren when you want to take a break than it is from the children.
You know, it's true, but more and more grandparents are, you know, they have their grandchildren living with them, or they live with the grandchildren, and they're responsible for the care.
Yes,
you know, there's so many
true things
that have changed in our society, and many parents have to be somewhere else working.
I was going to ask you, as a start out, how significant is the role of grandparents today? Is it more or less essential than in days gone by? Because, like you say, you know, a number of children and grandchildren are moving back in with grandparents, but on the other hand, you know, it's not like the extended families that everyone had back in a century ago or something, where they all lived on the farm together. But I guess they still play a pretty essential role today.
Right. You know, there are about 7 million grandparents that have grandchildren living with them, and
oh,
they are responsible more and more for their care and their custody. You know, some of them have full custody with their children living in their home, or they're living in the child's home. Some have full care of the child while the parent is working. Then there, you know, some people just get frequent visits. They don't live very far away, so they get to see each other on the weekends or special days. Sometimes It's only on the holidays, but, you know, people live on the other side of the country, and so those grandparents connect through the internet and through video phones and Skyping and email, but more and more the connection is so needed because connections are lost in other places.
Yes, connections are definitely getting lost. And do you find that, well, you know, grandparents are getting more and more adept at technology and more connected onto the internet and things like that? Do most grandchildren welcome their grandparents connecting with them on all the social media and stuff like that? Or, you know, oftentimes they want their parents out of the picture on social media. But do most kids welcome having grandparents just a stroke away from, you know, sending photos and things like that? Or do they?
I think it's probably a comfort to know that if they want it, it's there. It's immediately available if they want that kind of connection. Depends on what the bond is between the child and the parent, and by extension from the child to the grandparent, you know. Sometimes children can't really talk to their parents, but there's a grandparent there that can be a comforting presence or can give guidance. You know, it really depends on how the child has been raised and how they feel about making that connection.
Well, what are some of the primary attributes that are required today to be an effective grandparent? Are there certain things that, you know, requirements or attributes that really are essential?
You know, I think a strong sense of who we are as individuals, you know, not as we're portrayed in the media, but really what our gifts and talents are, what it is that we have to share with our grandchildren. I think that we have a unique perspective because we're kind of living in what was the future, and we have a chance to look back past the present to the past and be able to see how things are unfolding, how they're evolving, and what direction, you know, they may be moving in. I think it's an opportunity to be enthusiastic about it, to be positive, to have a positive outlook, and, you know, to be willing to be that support in whatever way it's needed or desired or required, and really to have some compassion and love.
I know that it's also important you have some technological skills to try to keep up with the kids, and especially the grandkids. I know most 9 or 10-year-olds can run rings around me and using a smartphone or an iPad or any of that kind of stuff.
Oh, they know how to do it all. My grandchild is better at my iPad than I am.
Oh, yeah, that's a normal. And another thing I think that's required of grandparents is a great degree of diplomacy, too, because you've got a two-way mission here. You have to properly guide and protect your grandchildren, while you're not offending the parents. And that's, you know, a lot of diplomacy sometimes is required there if you're actively involved in the lives, or you want to be involved in the lives of the grandchildren.
Yes, you know, it's a kind of a yin and yang kind of thing. It's like opportunities to be very gentle where discipline is concerned, or unique lifestyles, or giving advice, making suggestions, you know, working with scheduling, seeing that everything can unfold in a respectful and loving way. And then it's being firm, you know, when it comes to the child's safety or their security, when it comes to them being protected from harm or abuse, when it comes to, you know, making sure that they have a place to live, that they have something to wear. You know, it's a lot being that place of acceptance and appreciation, you know, being firm in some things and gentle in other things, and recognizing that a lot of it is going to be stressful, you know, working with the parents who are sometimes less than enthusiastic about you offering advice, you know, sometimes.
I think of a situation that would be very difficult to resolve, and let's say that you are grandparents and you're 100% convinced that your son and daughter and his or her spouse are parenting in the wrong way in some aspect and are harming the child or the grandchild. And I'm not talking about anything illegal like drugs in the house or something like that. I'm talking about, say, you're convinced that they're overindulging the child or spoiling or whatever. and the parents won't listen. What, if anything, is your last resort if you really feel like it's something most important that you intervene or attempt to intervene in?
Yes, I think that that is a tough situation. And, you know, none of us really receive instructions on parenting. What we know mostly is the way that we were parented.
Yeah.
And so I may, you know, have a disagreement, for example, with the way my daughter is raising her child. But when I do, I speak to her about
how
I feel about it. It's not like I'm rushing in there and you're doing it wrong and this is the way that it should be done.
No, that's the last way to do it.
That's the last thing. But, you know, the communication is key there. And in terms of what to communicate, you know, we all have this guidance mechanism and it points us in the right direction. And when I'm headed in the wrong direction, something in me feels like, you know, this isn't quite right.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of listening, being in tune to my own needs and my own understanding, and being willing to do the best that I can to communicate from that point.
Do you think it's probably easier to communicate with your own daughter on a parental issue like that than it would be with a daughter-in-law? I would think that would be even more tricky situation to handle.
Yes, it could be tricky, but again, you know, it depends on the relationship. Like I have a son-in-law that, you know, from another daughter, but he's just like a son. So with him, you know, it would be the same situation as talking to my daughter.
Yeah, no, there are obviously great in-law relationships. And
right, and then there's another son-in-law that it's entirely different. And I feel like, wow, you know, we really can't speak the same language here. And there it's just like, oh, let's do the best that we can, and, you know, it takes a lot of prayer.
Now, we had a prior program on in-laws back last spring.
Yeah.
The guest pointed out that, you know, you didn't select the son-in-law or the daughter-in-law.
Right, we didn't have any choice in it, and sometimes I guess we get lucky, and sometimes maybe we don't.
That's true. But, well, what are... can you give us like five fun activities that every child should share with a grandma or with another older relative or friend if a grandma's not available? What are some things that...
it depends on what the child is interested in. Like if the child likes the outdoors, then of course it would be going to the park or taking a walk or going to the beach, taking a trip to the zoo, you know.
Yeah.
We like to do indoor things, too, like working puzzles. There's a little fun comic strip that we read where it's two different pictures and they're slightly different in six different ways. And so together we try to figure out what are the ways that this picture is different from that.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those things.
You know, I used to read every night to her, and now she can read. She's 8 years old, and now... she reads to me, so it really depends, you know, on the child and the grandparent. I mean, I'm also an actress. She goes with me on auditions sometimes, you know. I feel like she brings me good luck. She goes and watches and, you know, she tells me what she thinks I did well. But it's mainly just keeping the avenues of communication open so there can be a sharing about what do you like? What are you interested? What can we talk? Or, you know, how can we sit here and just look at a movie together, you know, if that's what it is, going to the grocery store.
It doesn't always have to be a huge activity.
It doesn't always have to be
a
special thing. But special times are very, very important. And a special time is just, you know, we have 15 minutes. Just you and I, whatever it is that you want to do. I'm turning off the phone. I'm not going to be reading while I'm with you. I'm not going to be distracted. This is just a special time that you and I have, and it means so much to a child just to know that there is that opportunity to have your full attention. So that special time is very important.
Oh, yes. You know, another potential problem if you have more than one grandchild is favoritism and the appearance of that. And, say, one sibling over another or the offspring of one child over the offspring of another child. Do you have any suggestions on how you can avoid any kind of favoritism, either conscious or unconscious?
That's really a tough one, Roy. I really, I have some children that are almost like grandchildren to me, and when I do something like a special gift or a special trip for my granddaughter, include these other children as well.
Yeah, that's good.
It's hard when there are harsh feelings or, you know, when there are feelings of favoritism. Sometimes I try to think about what would I do or how would I feel about this person that I feel less close to in the same way that I feel about this person.
Yeah, like,
that's a good way to think about it. This person hasn't called, this person hasn't come by. But when this other person doesn't call or come by, I feel okay about it. I don't, you know. So it's like trying to find an even playing field, trying to be in a place of opening my heart more than I'm used to opening it so that I can really let more love in. And when I do that, I don't get stuck in places like favoring this one over that one.
Huh. Well, let's say you're middle-aged and are raising kids, and one or both of your parents or your spouse's parents are still alive and doing very well. Are there questions to ask your grandparents and your family before it's too late?
You know, I often think of that. I was very close to one of my grandparents, my grandmother. She was such a blessing in my life, and she passed when I was maybe 16 or 17, but she was such a beautiful person. And, you know, I wish that I had asked her what her parents were like.
Yeah.
Because when it gets to past my grandparents, my grandmother, I don't really have any other information, you know, and my other grandparents have passed before I was born. So I would love to have asked her about her parents and really what she wanted to do when she was a little girl my age. I think I would have asked her, like, what were are three really special things that you want me to remember all my life? Like, what are three important rules for living, or, you know, three things that have guided your life? I think, you know, I would have asked about favorite memories from her childhood so that I could grandchild that, you know? I don't really know. I have some things from my mother's childhood that she told me about I could share, but I don't. And so grandparents, you know, anybody that has a grandparent in their life, it can be such a blessing and such a wealth of knowledge and information.
But it would be so great to draw the grandparent out in the presence of your children, too.
Absolutely, so that the legacy of love can continue. You know, it's so important to really know who we are and where we come from, because that helps to clarify the path that we want to take.
Yeah, especially in today's society when everything seems so isolated and everything's so urgent, you know, to get done. And we so often forget and the elderly just sort of get kicked aside into the nursing home and we go about our business. I mean, not everywhere, obviously, but there's so much of that going on these days.
It happens because people are so busy, and elderly people or older people seem, you know, less active and less play less of an influence in our lives. But there's such a rich wealth of information and support and guidance.
Yeah, I don't know why we can't be more like the Far Eastern cultures, where the elderly are honored and you know, all their knowledge is accessed and they're treated like something really special, and they have accomplished a lot by living as long as they have, because it's not that easy to do. And
you know, you're right, and not only the elderly but our youth, we kind of treat people on both ends of the spectrum the same, you know. It's like,
that's true, we're all,
as I say, and not as they do, and be quiet and mind your business, and you know, it's like, kind of, people are so involved in the day-to-day life and the hustle and the bustle that who has time to think about those who have prepared the way in you know, in going through it, and those who are coming behind us. We're not, it's kind of like out of balance in feeling that we have to do for ourselves and we have to get to the top of the ladder and the heap, and you know, at any cost, and everybody else can fend for themselves.
That's another great service that a grandparent can provide, especially one that's retired and you know, is fairly close by to a grandchild or grandchildren, that they can be that person that has the time for the grandchildren, because they're not hustling to make a living or hustling to get here and there and all this other stuff, and they can take time to sit down with the child and share those heritages, and both find out, you know, draw the child out on what their future plans are and what their aspirations are, as well as giving guidance to lessons learned in the past. And I think
blessing for both generations.
Yes. Well, you frequently play the part of a grandmother on TV. How accurately are grandparents depicted in today's media? And is your personal experience as a grandmother at all similar to the roles you play? Or
oh, not in the least. It's like, you know, and a lot of times I'll get a call for an audition to go, and I actually went to an audition, and, you know, it was, they were making fun of elderly people. They were, like, supposed to be at a rest home, and somebody had come to give them instructions, and, you know, the elderly people were sleeping and drooling at the mouth or getting all confused. And, you know, I just left. I just thought, what, you know, it is to make fun, to make a caricature of older people is very disrespectful, and it doesn't really benefit anybody. So, you know, most of the time the roles are making fun of the older people, you know, in commercials or in the so-called reality shows or, you know, in the comedies. It's not a realistic depiction of a true grandparent at all.
And no, I was thinking of parts I've seen or roles I've seen where the grandmother or the grandfather are depicted as sweet, relaxed, you know, caring, positive influences in the lives of a dysfunctional family or whatever. But, you know, the thought of grandparents being constantly, or older people being constantly shown as detached, you know, way out of line and acting silly is pretty disgusting to me.
Right, it is. It really is.
Well, I notice you've created something called the 10 Demandments of Grandparenting. What are these all about?
Oh, you know, I just came up with some guidelines, and I don't know if you have time for all of them, but I start with spare the rod and love the child, because I don't think that corporal punishment really does anything but just show a child that the big one is the one that gets to, you know, make the rules and push you around, and you're not, you know, there isn't anything that I see that corporal punishment does to support a child. So I say spare the rod and love the child.
Yeah.
I say children should be seen and not ignored.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Should be actively encouraged to express how they feel about things.
Yeah, that's for sure, too.
To ensure that a child always feels and is safe and protected and cared for and cared about.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing of all, is to a child to feel that they're safe and cared about. There's nothing more tragic than a child that feels like that their parents don't want them, or there's no one that wants them, and they're just a necessary bother, and you're in the way or whatever. Those are almost
certainly the kind
of... And,
you know, there's many children that feel that way, and more mature people that don't have an actual grandparent, there are so many children that they could grandparent just by spending some time, you know, or giving a little advice or being some support.
I suspect there are volunteer organizations where grandparents say that don't have any grandchildren right in the area, or maybe don't have any at all. I guess they could get involved in the, you know, serve as a surrogate grandparent. Do you know any organizations like that that somebody could contact? Or,
you know, I know there are several different organizations on the web that, you know, you might just Google surrogate grandparenting. I'm sure a bunch of places would come up.
Yeah, I'm sure they would, because there's such a need that for. I know they, you know, they have boys and girls clubs for the surrogate parents, and grandparents would be a very good surrogate also.
Yes.
Well, speaking with you today, I would conclude that effective grandparenting is extremely essential, but also a very difficult mission. From your experience, can you recommend some prayers and meditation that can help keep multi-generational families happy and content together?
You know, there's so many different ways to pray and so many different spiritual paths, but whatever path is filled with love and compassion and peace, you know, there's an old adage, and that is that the family that prays together stays together.
Yeah.
If there is any way to gather people together in the family and just even to say something like what you appreciate or what you for, you know, these are...
Yeah, go around a circle and say what you appreciate,
you know,
about each one or something like that.
Right, and people do that kind of thing around Thanksgiving, which is coming up.
Yeah.
But we don't have to wait for that special day.
Unfortunately,
you know,
they do that once a year. And
right, and they think that's sufficient. But,
yeah,
you know, the law of gratitude is that the more I express gratitude, the more I have to be grateful for.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So if I want to have more things that I'm grateful for, the key is expressing gratitude for that. And I did create a CD called Calling in the Circle. It's about...
Yeah, I was going to mention that and ask you how somebody can get a hold of that. Or
You know, it's I do have a website, and it's my name is Greta, and I'm a reverend, so
yeah,
the website is Rev Greta,
R-E-V-G-R-E-T-A. Yeah, I went to there.
Greta.com, and the CD is on there. And I also have a grandparents' prayer that is a free download that people can download an audio version of it, so they hear me praying the prayer, or
great,
a PDF file that they can read or post. And it's just support for the practice of grandparenting.
And I notice you also offer a free monthly newsletter on that website.
Yes, the newsletter is in process, but I do have a blog on there, and I do have a Facebook page as well at RevGreta.com. There's a link to that where I post some of my writing. So I'd be delighted if any of your listeners are interested in going to RevGreta.com and taking a look around to see some of the other things that I do.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I think, you know, that so many people, when they get older, they older and middle aged, feel like the best years are behind them, and that they don't have a heck of a lot to look forward to other than maybe self-gratification. And there's such a key role as a backup to parents who are so harried today, to be that solid grandparent and get involved in the grandchildren's lives. And I certainly would recommend that people follow and then look at that CD that you offer. It's called Calling in the Circle, Peace and Power Through Prayer and Meditation. And I think that's certainly a secret to success and peace of mind in the latter years of the second half of life.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Roy. I have loved being with you today and love to have an opportunity to just talk with you again sometime.
Yeah, we'll have you back sometime. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right. God bless you.
Well, it's that time of year again. Thanksgiving is at the doorstep, and Christmas and New Year's are close behind. And here's a scenario that plays out, it seems like, everywhere in America, especially in middle-aged marriages. The wife, ahead of the holiday, pictures the family, ideally an extended family if relatives live nearby, both male and female, sitting around a table leisurely with a big leisurely Thanksgiving dinner, everyone bringing everyone else up to date on the family news, discussing family reunions coming up, and just having a great old time conversing and restoring relationships that maybe have been absent for a year or two. And then the actual day arrives, and when we picture the home, we see the men in the family rushing through dinner, gobbling down the turkey, and rushing on into the family rooms so that they won't miss the kickoff of the afternoon football game on TV. And they're whooping it up in there while the women are all in the kitchen washing the dishes or cleaning up the mess. And so begins the annual spousal conflict and bout of mutual hard feelings. And our guest today says holiday football may be the first step to your divorce. Will your family, will your spouse give you the turkey drop this year? Well, our next guest is couples therapist Marcus Ambrister, and he's going to talk turkey with us about how to handle difficult situations like this, remaining calm, communicating effectively, and resolving conflicts in your marriage without drama or trauma. And Marcus has been a practicing therapist for 15 years. He's got a master's degree in transpersonal counseling psychology. He's an ordained minister who has worked extensively with Native American and yogic healing modalities, and he's counseled Vietnam veterans and their wives to deal with post-traumatic stress disorder. And he's author of a brand new book called Pillars of Awesome Relationships, How to Love Your Man When You Are Ready to Kill Him. And I love that title. Hello, Marcus. It's a privilege to have you as a guest on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Yeah, I'm honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with a holiday football dilemma. My son, my father-in-law, and I really don't want to miss the kickoff on TV. Our bellies are stuffed, and the couch is so much more comfortable than sitting in those dining room chairs and listening to a woman's conversation about niece Becky's upcoming wedding or the latest new baby in the extended family. How do we resolve our conflicting interests without tension and argument?
Yeah, isn't that what happens sometimes?
Yeah.
And whether it's about football or no matter what it's about, conflicts like that come up. We have different expectations, and
yeah,
we have different ideas about what's going to be fun, what's going to be the best thing to happen. And
yeah,
those conflicts are going to, like, people are going to have different feelings and different desires and different wants. That's
yeah,
going to happen. And there's one scenario that keeps coming up time and time again is people start off with a great connection with each other, and over time, because those little conflicts don't get resolved, they wind up feeling like their connection with each other is either lost or just buried under a mountain of hurt, frustration, anger, and resentments that just keep piling up.
Yes, and you wonder in a situation like Thanksgiving where it's, sometimes it happens year after year, why the husband and wife don't sit down before the guests arrive and talk about, you know, a win-win type situation, like let's have dinner early enough so that we can leisurely have it without worrying about the football game, or how about, you know, the men retiring to the den after a while and the women to the living room and having their free time, and then we both clean the dishes and do the cleaning up after all the guests are gone in the evening.
Yeah, you just said an important piece. How about talking about this?
Yeah, and not in front of all the guests either.
Yeah. Let's talk about it ahead of time. And that's an important dynamic that most people either never learn to do or they're too scared to do in any situation, is let's talk about what I'm expecting. Let's talk about what you're expecting.
Yeah.
And the important piece is each person honoring what the other person wants.
Yeah, it seems like such a logical approach, and yet so
yeah,
few people seem to take it.
Yeah, and if we both don't want, or if we're both not honoring our desires and the other person's desires, then we get polarized.
Yeah.
Then it becomes a me versus you, and what you want is, you know, I start feeling like what you want is taking away from what I want,
yeah,
and vice versa. And then the arguments start, and people start arguing about who's right or who's wrong, and it generally goes nowhere.
And that's the real reason why arguments happen in the first place, I assume, because everyone's arguing right versus wrong. I want to, you mentioned,
yeah,
you have one word that can stop an argument instantly. Please tell
on
us
the
what
spot.
That word is.
Yeah, in fact, I've got a, if people go to the website, pillarsofawesomerelationships.com,
yeah,
I've got a free download that's available to them that you just put in your name and email address and get an audio download about what's this one word that can end arguments
instantly.
Okay,
so we won't tell them what that word is. I'll have to go to your website to get that.
Actually, since you asked, it's I'll go ahead and tell you. It's a very simple thing. It's curiosity.
Curiosity, yeah.
And the... Like, when you're in a place of being curious, it's real different than trying to win.
Huh. And that's a good point.
Get curious about what's going on with your partner. Get curious what she wants. Get curious what he wants.
Yeah.
And make the effort to understand not only what they want, but why they want it, what's important to them. And when that happens, when you really listen to somebody, it seems in relationships, it seems like a magical thing happens.
Yeah, and that's how you, like you put it in, I guess in your book or somewhere I saw, you said how you can make your partner think that you're on their side, even though when you and he or he and she are fighting, if you're curious and really care about their motives and what is bugging them rather than just what's bugging me.
Yeah, it's like when we feel heard, and I bet if we polled all your listeners right now and asked how much they felt really heard by their partner and felt like their partner knew what was important to them and cared about what was important to them, I bet we'd get a pretty poor response on that. And that curiosity, coming from that place of curiosity, is vital.
Yeah,
and
as you also put it, treat your spouse like your best friend, even when you're mad at your spouse over something.
Yeah. How would things be different if we all did that?
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? Well, your new book, Pillars of Awesome Relationships, promises to show us how to consciously create intimacy on emotional, spiritual, and physical levels. And to use your term, that's a pretty awesome challenge. Can you give us a brief summary of how we can begin to accomplish these three levels of intimacy?
Yeah, the biggest thing is having the mindset so that we don't feel like we get knocked down when little problems come up.
Yeah.
So that when little problems come up, we have a strategy to be able to handle them. We don't get freaked out when little problems come up. We don't get defensive. We don't start planning our counter argument, but we know that the problems are coming up because it's a chance for us to get closer ultimately.
Yeah, and I love the way you talk about thousands of relationships every day that give us three choices. We can either get closer to the other person emotionally, we can maintain the status quo, which I think probably most relationships or encounters, we just maintain the status quo, especially if we've been married for a number of years and played the same role, or we can move emotionally further away. And obviously, if we know which way we're trying to move it, it could make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And overall, and this will be important for your listeners particularly, looking at what's going on in middle age, our job here is to mature through our entire lifetime.
Yeah.
And most of the problems that come up in relationships are places where we're sort of emotionally stuck and we haven't fully matured.
Yeah,
most of the couples that come into me, the arguments that happen because people have a grown-up lifestyle and grown-up finances, and they have the emotional skills of somebody much younger than their chronological age.
They sure do. There's a lot of big babies out there.
Yeah, and so it's like, no, I'm right. No, I'm right.
Yeah.
No, I'm right. And that's kind of how the arguments end until people just get frustrated and walk away, but it's never truly resolved.
Well, I love the way you put it in your introduction that the sign of a really good marriage is when your spouse worries, your spouse can depend on you as a strong helpmate rather than somebody that she or he would want to keep the problems from. And you talk about a 72-year-old couple that came into your office, and when they started relating to each other in that way, it made a world of difference.
Yeah, and this couple that came in, they were 72 years old, and I asked them when they initially called, I said, why are you guys thinking about coming in for counseling? And the guy said, well, we've been together 43 years, and I think we can do things better than we have for the past 43 years. And
well,
like,
you know,
awesome.
That's a wonderful first step to admit that.
Yeah, and so they came in, and she was a world-class worrier. She would worry about everything. And he was crazy about her. He was like, this is the most incredible woman I've ever known.
Yeah.
And when she falls down in that worry hole, I don't know what to do. And I keep trying to talk her out of it, and nothing seems to help. She just gets worried more. And what was actually going on is the way he was with her, it landed with her as, quit doing that, you're doing it wrong, quit doing that.
Yeah.
And what she really needed was just to feel his love.
Yeah.
And the image that I suggested to him was, just think of yourself like a big overstuffed down comforter that she can just lean back into and be wrapped up and feel held and feel loved.
Yeah, I'm afraid with my wife, I'm more like a porcupine.
Yeah. So, and I'm willing to bet more than anything else, she just wants to feel how much you really like her.
Well, you have four pillars of awesome relationships in your book, and they're kind of tough to figure out. Maybe you can clarify a couple of them. How do bright lights cast dark shadows? How is that one of the pillars?
The love is the brightest light in the universe.
Oh.
And anytime we feel attracted to anybody in any way, whether it's friendship or romance or just the love that you and your wife have, it makes us want to get closer. And as we get closer, that bright light of love is going to make any unhealed hurt that we have buried inside show up as a very dark shadow.
Oh, I see what you mean.
And so while the relationship is drawing us closer, it's also going to bring up those buried hurts that we've never resolved. And it may be something that happened in our childhood. It may be something that happened in college. It may be something that happened last week at work. But it's
maybe
like those
hurts
are
going to get through. Maybe something your spouse has nothing at all to do with. It was a prior girlfriend or a prior boyfriend.
Exactly. But it's going to come up, and our relationships call us to heal. And so as we get closer, the bright light of love is going to make those dark shadows show up, you know, as just this black yuckiness.
Yeah.
And at that point, if I am not willing to address that hurt to let it begin to heal, then I have to stop getting closer.
Yeah.
And
well, first you have to be aware of what's causing the hurt, and then you can start addressing it, because obviously
that's where having the mindset of really awesome relationships comes in. And the first four chapters, the pillars of awesome relationships, just teach the mindset of how to deal with problems when they come up and to understand them, so that we're not knocked off kilter when they do come up.
Yeah, I also like the one that hurt feelings are like rowdy teenagers.
Yeah, the rowdy teenagers, when teenagers are being rowdy, you just want them to shut up and go away.
Yeah.
But what they actually need to do is mature. And how hurt feelings mature is by feeling them. And none of us want to feel those hurt feelings that are buried inside. None of us want to feel, you know, the insecurity or that pain. But when we do, and when our partners can be there to support us, then something else begins to emerge. And it's the genuine part of our hearts that got locked away when that hurt happened years ago.
Well, your book also talks about 12 common pitfalls that make relationships rough. And obviously, we don't have time to discuss all 12, but should you give us two or three of the pitfalls that we should try to avoid?
Yeah, one of them is saying no, not saying no. There are times that we all need to speak up for ourselves and either say no are just not put up with something that's not good for us.
Yeah, and the dumbest thing is to not say no and then be resentful that you're having to do something that you don't want to do or you don't feel
exactly.
comfortable.
Exactly. Yeah, and the and another one is not saying yes. That's yeah. another pitfall. And what I mean by that is not saying yes to who you truly are.
Oh, I see.
So
yeah,
what I teach is for people to take a breath, check in, you know, check in with their heart, check in with their gut, and feel how they truly feel in that moment and embrace it. And then,
yeah.
you know, and the big piece that's threaded throughout the book is the communication skills on how to share with our partners in a good way, you know, what's going on inside.
Yeah, that's such a key to all relationships is that sharing that we so many times we fail to communicate what's going on to somebody that we're committed our lives to, and yet we still don't bring it all out. And there's one in a man that I really liked, inspiring you man versus emasculating your man. I kind of
yeah.
relate to that about women nagging at their husbands.
Yeah, and that's women, you know, as smart as us guys want to think we are,
yeah.
our women generally have a better, clearer sense about what's going on with us than we do.
Yes, they do.
And they don't, like, we never let women know that they're actually smarter than us.
Yeah,
we'd
we
do a lot better
that.
If we did. Yeah, we can't do that. Oh, no. But in that chapter, inspiring your man versus emasculating your man, is basically about saying, hey, your man may not be as emotionally sophisticated as you want him to be.
Yeah.
So you may have to let him know in real simple terms the, you know, what you need from him.
Yeah.
And just this morning, and a woman came in, and she was really frustrated that she had some deep emotional hurts coming up last night and went to her husband, and he didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, you may have to be real simple with him. Just say, I need you to hold me.
Yeah.
I need you to hold me and keep feeling how much you love me.
Yeah.
And
what an excellent.
I said, yeah. And I said, did you, you know, could you have said that? And she said, I was thinking that, but instead I just got hurt and left and slept on the couch.
What a perfect example of how you can move closer instead of drawing yourself away. You know, that simple thing of
yeah.
instead of having him hold her, she went to the couch.
Yeah.
And there was that little break in the relationship that, you know, those things tend to build up, and pretty soon the man ends up on the couch permanently.
Yeah.
Well, how best can someone purchase your new book, Pillars of Awesome Relationships?
As you go to the website, pillarsofawesomerelationships.com, and I sell autographed copies off the website there.
Oh.
And, yeah, and so there's a comment box on the order form. You can just tell me a little bit about yourself, and it'll be a completely personalized autograph.
Oh, I see.
And it's also available on Amazon, but we've got a few extras for you off the website. And if for anybody who does order a copy off the website, I offer a free 30-minute consultation by telephone.
Oh. Yeah, I know
so
you also have private practice and you do phone consultation as well as in your office in Nashville.
Absolutely, yeah. And so I've actually got quite a few couples that I work with long distance over the telephone or by Skype, and
yeah.
and it's been amazingly effective.
And you also offer workshops, and you've got one planned in December, I guess, if somebody's interested in that.
Yeah, the second weekend of December, it's a two-day workshop. We go from 9 o'clock on Saturday morning till just about dinner time, and then again on Sunday.
Wow.
And it's a chance to dive in as deep as you're willing to go with your partner. And
they
cover
can find out about that on your website as well, the locations and all that kind of good stuff.
Yes, on the website. And we're going to be, I know after New Year's, we don't know the exact dates, but I'm going to be in St. Louis again and in Charlotte, North Carolina again, and plus workshops here in Nashville.
So the December workshop is in Nashville?
The December workshop will be here in Nashville. Yeah, it's the second weekend on Saturday and Sunday.
We'll catch the Grand Ole Opry after the workshop's through on Saturday. Sounds like a great weekend.
There you go.
Well, I would recommend both Marcus's book and my own, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, because we include several chapters on improving relationships with spouse, children, and on the job. And what I like so much about Marcus's book and my own also is they both include extensive exercises. And as Marcus puts it, you're not going to improve your relationships just by reading a book. You have to personalize it and put into practice what you're reading, or it really is kind of a hollow exercise, as I found out over the years when I read books and then really didn't do anything about what I learned. And
let's
make it a goal for the holidays not to take that first step to divorce, but to create a wonderful, warm holiday weekend and then a warm, loving holiday relationship that extends to your marriage all year long.
Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome if we all did that? And the simplest thing around the holidays, especially around that holiday dinner, I suggest cutting off the conversation at the table 7 minutes early. And everybody get up. Men pitch in, get the dishes done. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, many hands make light work.
Yeah, that's
and
a great idea.
And everybody pitches in, gets everything done. That way, everybody gets to sit down in time for kickoff.
Yeah, and it's just so sad that so many times the holidays become a tense period with a lot of tension and pull and sway and misunderstandings and stuff. And it should be the one of the highlights of the year. And it can be that way if you approach it the right way. And I want to wish everyone a most joyous Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. And thank you so much, Marcus, for appearing today, and best of success on your new book.
Oh, thank you much. You take good care.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.